So there you go. A little bit of breaking news out of the Blue Jays, Kevin Barker.
Uh-huh.
The Blue Jays announcing the club it's going to play will play its third homestand May 14th to 24th at TD Bank Ballpark in Dunedin, Florida. And after that point, or at that point, I should say, a decision will be made as to whether or not the Jays will relocate. Well, they'll more than likely relocate to Buffalo. I think the chances of coming to Toronto right now aren't all that good. So that's probably no great surprise. The Jays have also announced, by the way, that weeknight games will be played at 7:07 from 6:37 p.m. So they've moved that back as well. But there's some clarification. I know that one of the things Ross Atkins said is they wanted to give the players as much lead-in as they possibly could when it comes to letting them know where they're going to play. So if you're the Blue Jays player right now, you basically know through the end of May, your home games are going to be in Dunedin.
Yeah, and also I think, too, that those 7:37 starts, you saw that.
7:07. It was going to be 6:37. Now it's 7:07.
Okay, well, yeah, but you saw that in spring training with the sun in left field, how bad that was. So you move it back to 7:07. You don't have to worry about that, the high sky kind of thing. Hey, you take that away, you give them the best chance possible to win.
Yeah.
It's kind of smart.
And I can tell you this, too, though. There was some thought being given, and there is some thought being given to having the Jays games in Toronto start at 6:37 early in the season. So that's something to keep in mind. That was one of the things. And that, again, those are games that are in Toronto. But I think in a lot of ways, that's simply because early in the season, crowds aren't all that big. I think it makes sense. You want to get a few more kids in maybe by starting at 6:37. Maybe take advantage of people who are staying downtown for dinner, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm up for 6:05. I think the later, you know, you get less people that are younger watching baseball. That's baseball's issue.
Young
kids not watching baseball.
Summer you can go back to 7.
Sure,
7:07.
Make it younger where, you know, they don't have to stay up till 12 o'clock to watch a baseball game.
But there you go. So the Blue Jays will be 2 months. They'll be in Dunedin.
Hey, before we get going here, don't you have a birthday today?
I don't know.
I mean, you did turn a big number today. You look awfully nice. And I do have. Ooh, that's nice. You know, I was thinking what I wanted to do for you. So instead of me doing it, I wanted to get my son to do it. Now, my son's 8 years old. So I wanted to get my son to give you a birthday gift. So here it is.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, that's nice.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Uncle Jeff. Happy birthday to you. Go, Rays, go.
There you
go. Happy birthday, Uncle Jeff.
There you go.
Now, okay. When I raise up. Yeah, yeah. You know,
Thank you, Chase. Thank you.
He's a cutie. When I was driving to work, and you know, all those, he's singing, he's so cute doing it, and I was loving that until I heard those three words, "Go Rays, go." And I'm not kidding. I was almost swerving off the road, and I was thinking, am I going to have to pull over and make my son walk the last 1,000 yards to school?
How can you not like the Rays?
Because he's starting to be a Rays fan.
Go.
They're winning again this year. They're going to win the East this year.
They are not even going to be close. Maybe if it's a 75 game season.
Not even going to be close.
Huh?
Not even close. They'll beat the Yankees probably by 5.5, six games.
They may not beat the Blue Jays.
They'll beat the Blue Jays. They're going to be in first place in the East this year.
Wow.
Because they got it all figured out. You know they got this figured out. I keep telling you folks, the Rays have got the answer to COVID-19. They're just not letting any of us know about it, but they do.
What do you think it is?
I don't know, but I guarantee you that it's only going to last six innings. Come on, that's not bad. Well, anyhow.
Hey, well, happy birthday.
Thanks, I guess. Yeah. I didn't think I'd make 60, let alone 61, but... That's right. I owe my college roommate $250, too.
You actually made a bet on how old you're going to...
Yeah, I made a bet that I wouldn't make it, that I wouldn't clear 60. So now I owe him $250.
Way to go, Jeff. Way to go. You owe him $200.
$250.
$250.
Yeah.
Well, these are tough times. Where are you getting $250 at? I have to pass around a hat?
I don't know. Well, probably.
I mean, it's like four people in the office here. We can come up with about $7.50, somewhere in that range.
I don't know. Anyhow, thanks for the sentiment.
That's all, Chase.
Thanks for the sentiment.
I was all on board.
Sid Sixero's birthday today, too, and Celine Dion.
Yeah, and your daughter's, too, right?
And my daughter's
birthday,
too.
You know what's cool about that?
What?
Is me and my father had the same birthday.
Yeah. July it's good. It cuts down on
pretty
expenses.
Cool. Yeah.
That's good. So, yeah, Emma, happy birthday to Emma, who's hopefully at this point, well, no, she won't be. I don't know. She'll be doing stats class or something like that at Queens. But anyhow, hopefully she isn't. Hopefully she's out in the patio drinking. Because she's 21 now, so she can drink anywhere in the world, basically.
Eh? That's awesome.
See, 21 to me was the big age. Everybody talks about 18's nothing. Because basically, if you're in Manitoba, the legal drinking age is how old do you look? Right. So, I mean, Manitoba, you can hit the bars at like 15.
What is it that you can drive by yourself?
Manitoba?
What age?
7. No, in Manitoba, you can drive. In Manitoba, if you used to be able to get a license if you were working on a farm where you could drive at 14.
Yeah, that's how I learned how to drive.
Yeah.
Well, you remember my grandfather used to have the tractor with the gear shift between your legs?
Yeah.
And
Those are fun, man.
I would always jerk the clutch.
Oh, really?
Well, the tractor, because it was a 3-wheel tractor. Had that big wheel in the middle and the two big ones on the side.
I could see you.
And my grandfather.
I could see you jerking a clutch. So easily.
Man, I just soft tossed that to you, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. You really did soft toss.
Yeah. Some things never change.
Yeah. So anyhow, so not 18, with 21 was the big one because then you're legal everywhere. 18 is, 19 is, 21's big. 21 because then you're free.
Yeah.
61's
just, I mean, after what number does it just, it doesn't really matter anymore. Are you there yet?
Oh, I think 45, 45. I think once you get.
I'm 45.
Yeah, I know. That's why I pulled it out. You think I just pulled that number out of my ass? No,
you
once you hit 40.
I was left-handed.
Once you hit 45.
Nice try.
Once you hit 45, it's all downhill.
That's it, huh?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, it just depends on the speed of the downhill movement. But
oh.
Anyhow.
What's the first thing to go after 45?
So we're going to try something new tomorrow on Baseball Central.
I can't wait.
We're going to call it Walk Off Wednesdays. And what we're going to do is we're going to take calls. We're going to turn it over to you. So it's up to you. If it's crap, it's because of you. It's not because of us. So it's all on you, the listener.
Yeah.
And we're going to take calls. And I'm just going to shut up and let Barker answer all
the
questions. Yeah, maybe texts.
Mm-hmm.
But the call of the day, well, we got something special for the call of the day, and that can be the best question of the day as picked by Barker and myself. It can be the pithiest comment of the day as picked by Barker and myself. We'll have a little something for you, and that'll be every Wednesday on Baseball Central.
Think of some good questions now.
Yeah, think of some good questions.
Some good ones.
And tomorrow's easy because we'll be talking about, we'll give you our picks for the season.
You know.
Don't
be coming on here asking how long Bo Bichette's hair is, or you know, ask some good stuff.
Ask stuff that is going to force Barker to.
I was on the morning show, and there was a really good question on the text line.
What
they
was
had
it?
16 wins in spring training. How long will it take them to get 16 wins? That's a great question.
That is actually a very good question.
That's a great question.
That's a real good question. That's very good.
Yep. I said, this is what I said.
Yeah.
I said in April, they're playing the Yankees, the Rangers, the Angels, the Yankees, Kansas City, Boston, Tampa Bay, Washington, and Atlanta. I said, it won't be in April.
No.
That's what I said.
No.
And then they got Atlanta again and Oakland and Houston, Atlanta and the Phillies and Boston and Tampa and the Yankees and Cleveland.
Yeah, they get no.
It's you know, they're going to play good baseball.
Yeah. Take a look at, read out the last month of the season to people. Just read out the last month of the season.
Well, you got Oakland, the Yankees for 4, Baltimore for 3, Tampa Bay for 3, Minnesota for 3, Tampa Bay for 3, Minnesota for 3, Yankees for 3. No, I'm sorry. Minnesota for 4, Yankees for 3, Baltimore the last 3 games of the season.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a hard start and a harder finish.
Yeah.
That's
a perfect question to ask us
tomorrow.
That's
a great one. That would probably win it for you.
Yep. That probably would.
Yeah.
But now that we said it, it won't.
It's food for thought. What would they have to do to win 16 games quickly? That's even a better thought.
Yeah.
I think it's just little tiny things that you can pick at.
I'll ask you this. Now, we know now today. And I should mention, by the way, Justin Morneau is going to join us at 2:25. He's going to be part of our special coverage on Thursday, and he'll be part of Blue Jay Central on Thursdays. We get you set for the opener between the Yankees and the Jays. I'll ask you this. Playing in Dunedin, until May 24th. Does that help the Blue Jays? Does it hinder the Blue Jays? Or is it a push? Does it not matter?
I think it's a push. Right. I think, you know, you would say the ballpark, but the visiting teams get to play in that ballpark too. You know, again, in April, they're playing the Angels, the Yankees, the Washington, and Atlanta for a game in April in that ballpark. And then they're playing two more games against Atlanta in May, and then they play the Phillies, Boston, and Tampa Bay in that stadium. Look, it's, you know, again, it's the little things for me. Offensively, if they got four or five guys playing 140 games because of the talent, they're going to score a bunch of runs. I think we know that. Defensively, can they make the routine play boring? That's a question. Louis Rivera, not a lot of people talk about this, has to have a great year at third base. When he's rowing the arm like this, 99.9% of the time, that guy's got to be safe at home. Every run's going to matter. It's just the little things. You know, Dunedin doesn't have a tunnel in the dugout.
That's right.
So you got to be real good coaching-wise to give guys that may come in heads up, because you're going to have to go down way down the right field line, get loose, do your thing. You're not going to stand there and just do nothing. You're going to go down, get loose. You're going to throw. You're going to take swings off the tee, whatever. Coaches got to be good telling them, hey, you know, nine batters from now, eight batters from now, you may pinch hit for this guy. Go down and get loose. You may pinch run for this guy, Jonathan Davis. Go down and get loose. So, you know, all of these things have to work together. It has to be just, you know, one big machine all working for the same goal. And, I think they did them a favor by moving the game back a half hour. You know,
yeah,
I said that lightly about the Sun, but it's
no,
a big
but you
deal.
Noticed that. I remember you talking about that. And that is something to keep in mind, because it's a small stadium. There's not a lot of big stands. The Sun is always in play in one way or another in that ballpark. For the most part, isn't it? It's either behind you, beside you, or above you.
Okay, you know, in small stadiums, in small ballparks, what do outfielders do? They play in. They'd rather take away the little blooper. If a ball's hit over your head, it's a home run probably. Yeah. Or it's off the fence, and that's a double. So you're trying to take away
that little blooper. No, but what I meant
blooper.
By small ballpark is physically small. Like, there's no...
It's a small ballpark. Small. Ball flies there. You know, if the wind's blowing out, it's really, really small. And... Yeah, it's all of these little things with the Sun. You know, the communication factor's got to be great. Bo Bichette, when he's running backwards, has to be the guy in charge. Whoever's playing center's got to take charge of the entire team. It's got to be loud. Every play that should be made has to be made. And if they start doing things like that, it'll give them confidence moving forward. And that's what they're going to have.
See, because the thing is, as much as Buffalo is a AAA ballpark, it's bigger physically than Dunedin. I'm talking about the stands and everything. I wonder if they're, I mean, maybe I'm reaching too much here. I wonder if that spring training feel could become a home field advantage in some way for the Jays. Just because, you know, visiting players aren't going to have a nice, spacious clubhouse.
I know if I were a visiting player and I was an everyday player and I was coming into that ballpark and I watched that flag blowing like it blows most of the time,
you'd be happy.
I don't care.
You'd be getting dressed. Yeah, you'd be getting dressed in the hotel.
Man,
you'd be suiting up in the hotel.
I couldn't wait to get that ballpark. That means you got to pitch down a little bit better. You got to throw more strike ones. You can't walk as many people, which they've done a little bit better job of that. But again, you know, doing it against Detroit's one thing. Doing it against the Angels, who have a great lineup. You know, they don't talk. A lot of people don't talk about that. Their rotation's not real good.
I got the Angels winning the West.
They're like, well, that's a push. But they're gonna have to do some things right and have a guy or two step up that you really wouldn't think would step up. Stripling. Maybe the breaking ball works. Maybe it plays early in the season. Maybe he can get some rollovers. Maybe he can get a punch out or two. It's pretty good. You know, he's talking about it. He's in-game adjusting the feel on the breaking ball is. You know, he can move his finger one way or the other and make it break more. Okay, that's great. Let's see it. Maybe that's a little bit of a surprise. Maybe Danny Jansen will get a couple big hits. Maybe Jonathan Davis will come in and pitch run and score from first. And that's a bit. It's just little things that can help this team go where they want to go. Again, we can say what we want. They're not as good as the Yankees. Are they as good as these other American League teams?
We'll see.
Most of them, I think. A lot of them.
But yeah, I don't think...
They're going to have to play good baseball.
Listen, I don't...
Not beat themselves.
I don't think there's a huge... I don't necessarily think there's a huge separation in the American League other than... I think the Yankees and the White Sox are better than just about everybody else. I'm picking the Rays just because I don't trust the Yankees. I don't trust them to stay healthy. I don't trust their pitching. I don't think their pitching is as good as a lot of people think it is. I know that Giancarlo Stanton and or Aaron Judge are going to miss 30 games. I just know they're going to do it. It's going to happen. There are some holes in that lineup. And the bullpen's not one of the best bullpens in baseball. Yeah. No Zach Britton, no Justin Wilson. It's not one of the best bullpens in baseball. Put it this way. As good as the Yankees lineup is, they need Domingo Germán to be really good.
Okay, let's talk about the Blue Jays. Okay, let's talk about their schedule.
All right.
They got 6 games against Texas. They got 7 games against Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
They got 6 games against Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
They got 6 games against Detroit. They got 19 games against the Orioles.
Yep.
That's 44 games in total. Say they go 34-10 in those games.
Sure.
I'm thinking. They got to win 90 games. They go 34-10 in that. That's 56 wins they got to get in the other games. You remember, they got 56 games against the Rays, the Yankees, and the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Red Sox not going to be a pushover. That lineup's pretty good.
The lineup's
pretty
good.
You got to score runs.
Yeah.
And then they play the White Sox, the Twins, the Astros, the Angels, and
then
A's.
You get the National League East.
So, didn't even mention that. They got 20 games against those. They got 10 of those in the National League with the pitcher hitting.
Yep.
Who wants to see Ryu Button? Raise your hand. I'm saying, all of these good top-end teams, it's top-heavy. It's the American League's top-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But what the top-heavy teams do, they beat the tar out of bad teams. Like the Orioles. You play 19 games against the Orioles. What did the Yankees do a couple years ago? They were like 18-1 against the Orioles.
Yeah, didn't Gleyber Torres hit 20 home runs against the Orioles or something like that?
That's how you're winning the American League East. Now, I'm not saying the Blue Jays are winning that, but if they want to make a playoff spot and they want to gain some ground,
they got to bury the bad teams.
It's easier to win 56 games somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, the 34-10 makes a lot of sense. You know, say they win, they go 35-9. That's 55 wins. It's just the more games you knock off against those bad teams, Seattle's a bad team. Detroit's a bad team. Kansas City, you know, they're scrappy, but they're a bad team. You should beat them. You're the Blue Jays.
Yep.
Your team's better. Your lineup's better. You have a number one in Ryu. You should beat these teams. Seattle is not a very good team. The point is, gain some momentum going in against these teams. Get some wins against them, and then figure out how to win the 55 or 56 other games somewhere else. You're scrapping it out. That way you don't have to win series all the time.
Yeah.
You can break even and still win the other kind of games.
Yeah, facing the National League East this year with, you know, you look at that division.
Oh.
I think the Braves are going to win the National League.
I'm with you.
I think the Mets, the Mets concern me a little bit. I think their defense is a little suspect. I'm not as in the Mets as a lot of people are. I think the Phillies are going to be better. The Phillies, you know, Jason Stark pointed this out on a FanGraphs podcast 2 weeks ago, and I had not paid attention to this. If you give the Phillies just a major league average bullpen, they win the East. I mean, the numbers are there. They win the East. So I like the Phillies.
Mm.
The Marlins are going to pitch their asses off against you.
They're going to play hard.
They're going to play hard.
Sure.
And Washington's got the guy in Juan Soto, who's one of the best hitters in the game, if not the best hitter in the game.
Yep.
They got Trey Turner, who's, you know, they got those old guys pitching. I mean, I look at the National League East. It's a tough haul. I know looking at Vegas, I think Vegas has the Jays for like 86.5 or 88 wins.
Yeah.
They're gonna have to play really good baseball to get 88 wins. Like, they're really gonna have to play good baseball.
That's it.
And then
what do you do? You know, can Charlie manage with National League rules? I know that sounds real simple, but him making the right move,
mm-hmm.
taking that guy out, double switching, it's not used to doing it, maybe does double switch the wrong way. He puts in the wrong guy. I know he's got 7 guys over there to help him.
Yeah, I'm not all
these
that
kind of things out.
I'm not all that worried about
it
Charlie
is,
managing a National League game. I'm more worried about, I'm like you, I'm worried about pitchers hit. For the life of me.
Yeah.
For the life of
Uncle.
Me. I do not understand how we don't have a DH this year.
Bargaining tool, you know how.
I know, but I'm trying to figure out, it doesn't serve, nobody wants pitchers hitting.
No.
They don't.
No.
You've asked guys, think about
Think about what pitchers are looking at this. You've had guys who haven't hit in a game for over a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know guys working bunting and all this stuff.
Really?
Man,
You could bunt 98.
No, I couldn't bunt 98.
How many
Hell
pitchers
no.
you know could bunt 98?
None.
I mean, there's a handful of them.
There are a few, like Madison Bumgarner.
You can
and they're
on
guys.
One hand.
Tell you what, the one guy the Jays have who can flat out hit is Steven Matz.
Flat out. I looked. It's about $170. I mean, if that's flat
okay,
out.
Okay, flat out for a pitcher. But he's not going to be. He's not going to be overmatched. At least he likes the idea of holding the bat. But geez, I don't want any of those other guys doing.
Thing I want is Steven Matz to worry about hitting.
Yeah.
Throwing a strike, get some people out, build your position, be athletic, and when guys get on base, keep them from scoring. That's just me.
Justin Morneau will be part of our opening day coverage on Blue Jays Central. He is, of course, a Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer, Minnesota Twins broadcast analyst, Sportsnet analyst as well. He'll join us next. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Shai Davidi is reporting that George Springer has had that second MRI on his oblique injury and that the injury is progressing normally. And as Shai said, the Jays are still going to wait till the last minute to make a decision on putting him on the IL. And I think it's noon. I thought it was noon the day of the first game. You have to set the roster, but I don't know. They're going to put him. I would think they'd put him in the IL. I don't see why he wouldn't. Unless the recovery is farther along. But anyhow, there you go. So that's good news at least. Because when I heard that there was going to be a second MRI, I'm thinking,
rather miss 10 games than 6 weeks.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, listen. I don't have any problem with that. But anyhow, there you go. So that from Shai Davidi, that would qualify. That would qualify as good news, I think.
Great news.
That it hasn't been.
I mean, greater news
it hasn't
would
been
be
aggravated.
He's playing, but.
Yeah, well, we'll wait and see. Again, Thursday is the Jays opener. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We'll have a special pregame show, Baseball Central, with Barker and myself. And we'll follow it up with the Blue Jays talk with Barker and myself. And Hyunjin Ryu will start for the Jays. Gerrit Cole for the Yankees. I don't know. Do we really know? Do we have an idea who's going in 2 and 3? Like, I mean, you can look at the spring training rotation and figure out. Stripling would appear to be one of them. But with T.J. Zoik making the team, I got to think T.J. Zoik is in the rotation right now, given the injuries to Pearson, given the injuries to Ray. I don't think you'd want to run out two lefties against the Yankees. At Yankee Stadium, I could be wrong. If you're going with the two most impressive starting pitchers out of spring training, it would be well, okay. If you're going with the guys that you're giving me the side eye. If you're going with the guys that you think are your two best right now, it would be Ryu and don't look at me like that. It'd be Ryu and Matz. But I don't. I think you got to go with you got to I mean, run. Got to run.
Matz is going to be working on about 9 days rest.
Yeah,
sooner
true.
Or later, I know they're going to do some simulated games between the last day of spring training and when the season starts.
Right.
But you know that's not real competition.
Yeah,
with
the Jays
guys running around the place. That's not in Yankee Stadium.
No, the Jays have today off. They will be working out at Yankee Stadium tomorrow. By the way, yeah. ahead of Thursday's game. Let's bring in Justin Morneau, Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer. He'll be part of our opening day coverage. He is also, of course, a Minnesota Twins analyst. Mr. Morneau, how are you doing? I trust you're keeping well and that you made it through spring training unscathed.
Yeah, I made it. So it was so good that I didn't have to go down there.
But, atta boy.
Yeah, everything's good. I'm excited, actually, for 162 instead of 60. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out and how pitchers are going to find a way to stay healthy. And
yeah,
it's going to be back to normal, sort of, but I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
Let me ask you this, because obviously, you know, keeping pitchers healthy and workloads and all that are going to be a huge story. And, you know, we've already seen teams. I think the you know, the Texas Rangers are talking about having two tandem starting a system where they have two tandem pitchers. They basically have a seven-man rotation. If you want to look at it that way, there are teams that are going to have six-man rotations. So obviously there's a lot of, and the Marlins are going to start Sixto Sanchez down in their alternate site as a way of monitoring innings and all this stuff. What do hitters have to worry about going from 60 to 162 and position players? Is there anything they have to worry about?
I don't think it's as much as pitchers. I think because guys, you know, you swing, and I think most guys were that had access to it were swinging the whole time last year, and they were getting their reps. And I mean, you take, I don't know, anywhere from 100 to 200 swings every day as a hitter. The game swings aren't as much. It's actually the extra work you're doing, you know, the drills you're doing in the tunnel, you know, before and then during the game and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure that hitters have a whole lot to adjust to other than their legs. I'm hoping we don't see, you know, an increase in hamstring or, you know, anything like that where guys are kind of pulling the quad or whatever. But I can't see how it is. I mean, guys are probably in the strongest and the best shape that they've ever been in with how much time they had to actually work out last year as opposed to having a 3-month off season. They had, you know, last year going into 2020, they had about a 9-month time to get strong and then a normal recovery basically in the off season and then back at it. So guys should be, you know, strong as they've ever been. Guys who had those nagging injuries and then all that stuff, hopefully got all that stuff taken care of last year. And I don't know. I think the pitchers to me is the real concern. And I think we have so much data on it now that's saying, you know, if you jump up a certain amount or a certain percentage of innings, then you're looking at a lot greater chance of injury. And I don't know, I think this pitching strategy, I don't think it's going to go away after this year. I don't think it's going to be one of those things that, oh, we're just trying to save guys. I think it's one of those things that I always hated spring training, especially the later part of my career, facing a different pitcher every at-bat. It's so hard to get a read on a guy. You know, you face a guy your first at-bat, and all of a sudden you come up in the third or the fourth inning again, and it's a different guy. And then you come up in the sixth and the seventh inning, and it's a different guy. And you're going, okay, I made some adjustments. I see what his fastball is doing today. I got a good look at his curveball, and all of a sudden I don't see him for another, you know, 3 weeks if he's in your division. But so I think this pitching strategy and this way of using pitchers, I don't think is just going to be an anomaly for 2021 because – it gives such an advantage to the guy who's on the mound. If you only see him once and you only see him once a month or once every couple of months or whatever it is, it's part of the reason why those guys in the bullpen are so effective with, you know, two pitches. It's a hard thing to do as a hitter to get a read on a pitcher. And I think guys they're going to see it work. I think you're going to see a little more suppression of the offense this year. And then teams are going to look at it and go, yep, it worked for the Rays. It got them to the World Series. Obviously they had, you know, Glasnow and Snell at the top of the rotation. It does a lot for you too, but it's going to be interesting to see even after this year if it carries over.
Okay, you're the perfect guy to ask this. You played for the Rockies. You know, ball flies line to line. It's a great place to go hit because all you got to do is tappy. And then say you go to the Dodgers, ball doesn't carry as much. You have to change your approach a little bit. We know the Blue Jays are starting out in Dunedin where the wind, when it does blow, is left center to right field line. If I'm a right-handed hitter, do you think I should try to hit the ball to left field to right field line? Is it that I should make that adjustment, or do I just stay within myself and do the same thing, hit it where it's pitched?
I don't know. I think it's kind of like the approach the guys take at Yankee Stadium, right-handed hitters. I mean, it's a short porch and right. It's 314 down the line. It's, you know, unlike the old Yankee Stadium, it basically cuts straight across to the bullpens in right center in the new Yankee Stadium. And you see Judge, you see LeMahieu's had a ton of success having that same approach. It makes sense. If you have a lot of chance to have success, you can cover a fastball away. You can cover, you know, a right-handed slider, a right-handed curveball. You can stay on a changeup. I mean, it's a good way to have success. If you want to take that approach and your park offers you that, it makes a ton of sense. It's almost the same thing as right-handed hitters in Houston just try to be dead pull hitters and hit that ball, or in Fenway or wherever you look at your park. It doesn't make sense to try and do what the park's not offering you. I know it's hard to do as a hitter if you haven't been working on it in the spring or it's not part of your game to all of a sudden go, okay, we've got the, you know, three potentially home series. So maybe, you know, 16, 20, 24 games, whatever it is at that ballpark. And you're going to change your swing. Well, that's going to make you fall into a trap, maybe a little bit of this isn't who I am as a hitter. So you have to, if you have that ability, of course you should. I think you should. It makes a ton of sense.
Okay. If you, I'm assuming, had a two-strike approach when you were playing. I tried to have one, eliminate the lower half, you know, play pepper with the baseball. We're starting to see that in you know, lineup long with the Blue Jays trying to have a two-strike approach. They'll have a heel raise. They'll have that knee turn, you know, trying to do the Beau Bichette thing. Is that hard to do? Is that hard to buy into a two-strike approach? And do some guys even need to try and have one?
Well, I think it depends on the hitter, obviously. I mean, you don't want Judge up there taking a half swing or something like that. But, you know, we did. In the Twins in the minor leagues, when I came up, it was mandatory with two strikes. This came from the top. Until you got to AAA, you had to follow. You had to choke up. You had to spread your stance out a little bit so you weren't taking as long of a stride. And then your thought was middle, you know, right center to left center with the fastball. So your thought is, I'm using the big part of the field with the fastball. And it makes you a little bit vulnerable to a fastball in, but it allows you to cover anything slow and allows you to cover away. And the thought was, if you choked up a little bit, it gave you a little bit more reaction time to recognize what the pitch was. It might have cost you a little bit of power, but the goal was to put the ball in play and put pressure on the defense. And I think it's hard to institute that at the major league level. All of a sudden to take, you know, nine guys in the lineup and say, hey, this is what we're going to do, and nobody's worked on it, nobody's been trained that way. If you say going into the offseason, hey, here's your swing, use your big leg kick. And the way it was put to us, that made a ton of sense. If you frame it to the hitters in a certain way, it was, okay, the first two are for you, the last one's for the team. You get yourself those first two strikes that you get. If you get yourself in a 2-0 count, try and hit that ball in the third deck. Do what you got to do. If you're 3-1, whatever you are, take as big a swing as you want. But when you get to two strikes, that one's for the team. That one's to put the ball in play, to, you know, help put pressure on and do all those things that, you know, that a good lineup needs to do. We've seen it with so many teams that have won the World Series the last few years. You look at the Boston team. They had an approach with two strikes that, you know, that was team-wide, that filtered down from J.D. Martinez. You look at even when the Kansas City Royals won, I know it was, you know, five seasons ago, but they had a contact team. They had a team that put the ball in play. They had some speed. They put pressure on the defense. San Francisco, for all those years, obviously had great pitching. But, you know, you look at the teams that have had success over the last 10 years, it's been a team approach. You can't go up there. It's very difficult to win a World Series if you're constantly going up there, not putting pressure on the defense, swinging and missing a ton, and not making the other team, you know, make mistakes and put pressure on them. And then you're making it easy on the pitchers. Your guys hate facing guys that are up there fouling off pitches. I mean, I'm not meaning to keep bringing up Yankees, but I mean, you look at a guy like DJ LeMahieu. He'll battle you. He'll foul balls off in the first base dugout. He'll make you work. And you get through that at bat, and that pitcher's mentally, you know, worn out. He's worn down. And it's valuable to have guys like that in your lineup. But when you have a team approach, 1-9, that are trying to do that, you run up that pitch count, you get in the bullpen earlier, you do so many things to that other team that really can help you have success as a lineup and sustain success.
Okay, how about a Kevin Biggio? He's one of the guys I just mentioned. You know, the shift. Yeah, I'm with you when we were playing and defenses were, you know, probably straight up. Occasionally you get a pull hitter up and some guys would be on one side of the field. Now, because of the shift, your two-strike approach doesn't have to be great. I have the entire half of a field that all I have to do is put barrel to baseball. Do you think that makes it a little bit easier mindset-wise to just go, okay, I've eliminated the lower half. I'm playing pepper with anything that's close, because I have this big of a target to shoot for.
If you remove pride from the equation,
yeah.
I think you should be able to do it.
That's it, yeah.
It's one of those things. It's, am I willing to go up there and take a 90% swing or an 85% swing to hit my single the other way? You know, and that's, to me, what it boils down to. It's the same thing with bunting. Obviously, you don't want your middle-of-the-order guys, you want them to try and hit the ball in the seats, and that's what they're there for. But your guys who are hitting 7, 8, 9, they have to be willing to understand that with the way lineups are constructed now, you have your best hitter hitting first or second a lot of times now. It's important for those guys at the bottom of the order to be able to get on base any way they can. And if it's flipping a single the other way and maybe choking up a little bit, or like you said, eliminating the lower half and just trying to use those hands, see the ball a little bit longer and don't be afraid to get jammed. And you and I both know, there's nothing that feels worse as a hitter of getting your bat snapped in two and getting eaten alive by a ball, you know, bearing in on your hands. But if you could eliminate that part of it and say, all right, I'm not worried about my exit velo. If it's a single to left and it's 60 miles an hour off the bat, it's still a hit and I'm still getting on base. And now the lineup turns over to Springer, whoever it is at the top. And all of a sudden he's hitting with guys on base. And now he's got a chance as a leadoff hitter to drive in 100 because those guys at the bottom of the order are willing to sacrifice a little bit of pride and a little bit of, you know, all that other stuff of maybe power hitting the balls in the seats for a team approach that can really benefit everyone.
Justin Morneau joining us on Baseball Central. All right, Justin, as somebody who was a good defensive first baseman, we know that Vladdy Jr. is going to be seeing action at first base. You look around this infield, Kevin Biggio's learning to be a third baseman. Marcus Semien is playing second. He's been used to being a shortstop. Bo Bichette self-admittedly needs to work on his defense, and he has said that that's a point of emphasis for him. How concerned would you be with the Blue Jays' infield defense this year, considering there's not necessarily a lot of swing and miss in this pitching on this pitching staff, certainly in terms of the starters?
Well, I think you're going to have a lot of dependence on your analytics staff and your positioning and making sure you're playing, you know, where the guys are most likely to hit it. I think that's number one. And I think teams do that so well now. It's, you know, Semien will play second, but most of the right-handed hitters, he's going to be playing somewhere close to his position that he's played.
True.
You know, the last few years, he'll be lining up on that shortstop side of the bag for a lot of these right-handed hitters. And so it's, you know, the game's changed so much. Guys that, you know, play third line up at short a ton. I mean, in Minnesota, Miguel Sano for years, you know, playing third, and then all of a sudden it's a shift, and he's playing straight up shortstop, and now he's learning to play first. It's one of those things where defense, to me, is a pride thing. Offense, guys are really always working on their swing, but defense is that thing that it's not pretty, but you get out there and you get the reps in and you take the balls live off the bat in live batting practice. That, for me, to become a better defensive first baseman was standing out there for a couple of groups and just getting myself in a position where I might only get three or four balls, but I'm reading that ball coming off the bat. I'm sitting back there going, all right, this is game speed, because you can take a 100 fungos a day and they might not have the same effect as lining up for an entire round of batting practice at your natural position and trying to field three or four balls and working on your first step and doing all those things that really don't go noticed. And it takes a long time for the defense to get better. But if you have a group that expects to win, and you have a guy like Semien who has pride and who's turned himself into, from a guy who, you know, he had a hard time playing him at short early in his career. He made a ton of errors, but his pride took over. He wanted to make himself a good defensive player. And I think these young Blue Jays can look at him and go, this is what it looks like to make 20 or 30 errors in a season and all of a sudden turn yourself into a free agent that multiple teams were trying to sign because of not only the offense, but also his defense and how good he made himself. And I think these other young guys can do that as well. It's pick from those guys around you, see what they did well, and then put the work in, put the time in and take pride in it. And guys will get better, and I think you have that potential there, and then you have the positioning thing on top of it as well that I think helps.
Justin, really good of you to do this, man. Thanks so much.
Great stuff.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to 162. Should be a fun year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Take care, man.
Thank you.
Stay safe.
Thanks, guys.
Justin Morneau, Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer. He will be part of our Blue Jay Central coverage on Thursday ahead of the opener, Yankee Stadium. He is also, of course, a Minnesota Twins analyst. So we're getting a little bit of clarity now from Major League Baseball as to how COVID-19 protocols are going to be handled this year. Barker and I are just watching Texas and Milwaukee playing right now, and there's fans in the stands. And we know that at Yankee Stadium there will be just over 10,000 fans in the stands for the opener. At least that's how many tickets are being sold. When the Jays take on Texas in Texas, folks, that place could be sold out. They're going to be opening the Texas is open. Well, Texas is open. Let's just put it this way. So, you know, one of the questions has been getting Major League Baseball players vaccinated. And kind of one of the things that hasn't been talked about, and it's been talked about now, one of the things that hasn't been talked about is, what if guys don't want to get vaccinated? I mean, there are people in society who don't want to get vaccinated, and there is no contractually obligated reason for a baseball player to get vaccinated. Major League Baseball's come up with an idea. It's borrowed it from the NBA. It's about peer pressure. And it's going to, I think, create, Kevin, some interesting clubhouse dynamics. So we want to talk about that when we come back. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We talked a little bit about this on Writer's Block yesterday. Major League Baseball has come up with a way, Kevin Barker, of sort of convincing players to get vaccinated. Again, bearing in mind that you cannot force anybody to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
So what baseball has come up with is a plan whereby if 85% of a team gets vaccinated, the restrictions that are currently in place will be relaxed. In other words, you will be able to have family members travel with you on the road, providing they are vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
You will be able to have access to some common areas. Now, it's not going to be as open as it has been in the past, but and you will be allowed to go out for dinner and things like that. So the idea is, from the commissioner's office and from the players' association, is, look, we can't force you to take it. But what we're going to do is we are going to rely on the team. We're going to rely on peer pressure. And I think that's really the only way you can go about doing this, isn't it? Is to kind of put it in the hands of the team and say, look, here, this is what we're going to do. And you guys kind of work this out. So as someone who spent time in a locker room, in a clubhouse, do you think that'll be a tough decision for a lot of guys? Like, do you think that's going to be, like, how would that be discussed in the locker room? I'll give you an example. I don't know. Marcus Semien, who's
Bo Bichette,
whoever, would hold a meeting, mm-hmm, and say, guys, this is what's up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to come down to, I mean, you could have everybody in the room could say, yeah, I'm going to go get vaccinated. And then a week after the vaccinations are done, you look down and you find out that your club only had 84% of its players vaccinated. Yeah. And now the rules aren't going to be in place, or the rules aren't going to be relaxed. I don't know who will know who was or wasn't vaccinated. Like, yeah, I'll tell you what, it was Mark Topkin, the Tampa Bay Times, wrote an article. He's not convinced that the Rays are going to hit 85%.
Mm.
Neither's Kevin Cash. He's not convinced that they're going to hit 85%. He doesn't think it's necessarily slam dunk. What's that discussion going to be like, Kevin?
I can only speak for myself. I know as soon as they said you can spend more time with your family, I'm taking the shot. I want this thing over. That's the more time you can spend with your family and do your job at the same time, the better off and the better you're going to be at your job. Well, how is that not incentive to take a shot? I can't speak for a person who does not want to take a shot. I'm speaking for myself. As soon as they say, your family can go where you go, give me the shot now.
But how does, I'm trying to figure out what that discussion would be like. Like, it really is, it's going to test your leadership group, is it not?
I don't think so. I think all you can do is you can stand up in front of the room, whoever your leader is, and say the rules. Say, if we get 85%, this is what we get to do.
Mm-hmm.
And say them all off. Say, make sure everybody hears them, and say, after you're done reading them, does everybody understand if we get 85% that we can do these things? Did everybody hear this? That's all you can do. You can't force a grown man to do something he doesn't want to do. And nor should you have to try and do that.
Mm.
But I find it hard to believe that people don't want to spend time with their families.
Yeah,
I just don't understand that. I don't understand why people wouldn't want this over with. Let's be honest. The only way this is going to be over with is if you take your shot.
Yeah,
that's really the case. Like, there's no other way. This thing's just going to keep dragging on until most people, not everybody, because not everybody's going to take their shot. But if most people get their shots.
Yeah, I...
And I would be first in line. That's just me.
Yeah, I think that, I really think that, especially in this business, in this industry, in the media industry, I think we've really... You know, we live in a little bit of a bubble, and I think we really underestimated right from the get-go how many people were going to take the vaccine. I remember talking to Jeff Passan about this. Passan and I were talking off-air, Jeff Passan of ESPN. We're talking about the vaccine in the U.S. He said, there's going to be a ton of people not taking it. Like, he said, this idea that, well, it's going to be over in the summer because everybody's going to be vaccinated, he said, there's going to be a lot of people not taking it. Like, this will be... Because with baseball, you're talking about a lot of people. Now, the NBA, you're talking about, what, a 15-man roster? I don't know, 15-man roster, coaches, traveling staff. Hockey, you're talking about what, 20, 25, 26 men. Baseball, you're talking about in my understanding, this is basically going to have to be the 40-man roster. And it's 85%, I believe. But this is where it gets interesting. If you got 85% of the 26-man roster of the Blue Jays agreeing to this, and halfway through the year, you got a bunch of injuries, you're bringing guys in, now all of a sudden, you don't have 85%. Now all of a sudden, the number's actually only 78% of your guys have been inoculated. There's going to be a bit of a balancing act here. There is going to have to be a lot of peer pressure / leadership exercised by guys.
How many grown men you know that can tell another grown man what to do?
Yeah, I'm with you. But again, that's all they got. That's all there is. It's going to be up to peer pressure. Anyhow, it's something to monitor. I just found it interesting because I think it's the only thing baseball can do.
Yeah, you can only say, I really wish we would do this.
Bingo. Exactly. Tomorrow is Wednesday. It'll be walk-off Wednesdays. Your chance to call us, to text us. If you make it good, you make it a good question, if you make a good comment, well, we may actually let you end the show. We'll explain it to you tomorrow.